The views and opinions expressed on the following program are not necessarily those of the staff and management of Salem Media of Hawaii.
Welcome to Hawaii's Tomorrow. Coming up today, Jeff meets with newsmakers, shares breaking news, spotlights top community activities and leaders. He'll keep you ahead of the news and informed as you make your way home today. So join Jeff Davis right here, right now, and every day at 5. So stay tuned and you'll have something to talk about over dinner tonight with Hawaii's Tomorrow today. That's Hawaii's Tomorrow today.
Aloha! It's me, Braden Avos. I'm back, and I believe in democracy. I say, go vote. Mahalo.
Aloha. I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, on this Monday, October 27th. And today we are joined live by the science team and crew aboard Schmidt Ocean Institute's research vessel, Falkor, currently working in the Ontong Java Plateau. The Ontong Java Plateau is a massive submerged seafloor platform north of the Solomon Islands that is slightly larger than Alaska. The largest volcanic eruption in the planet's history likely formed this plateau, and today we're going to be talking with some folks that are mapping this area and trying to find the mystery that still remains. Since October 15th, the research vessel Falkor has been mapping the region, looking for clues that might explain what happened to cause this plateau. We have a jam-packed show talking with scientists working on mapping this mysterious area. So without further ado, we're going to share a bit about this exciting research. So let's first start with AJ Reyes. AJ, are you joining us today? Are you on?
Hi, Carly. Yes, I'm here.
Oh, fantastic. You sound like you're right next door. Thanks for joining us. Now, you're currently based in Guam, but you're on the research vessel Falkor, and you work at the University of Guam Marine Laboratory. Can you tell us a little bit about what you're studying at University of Guam?
Okay, so currently I'm identifying the detoxifying enzymes known as cytochrome P450s in a tropical marine herbivorous fish, Siganus spinus, also known as the scribbled rabbit fish. These enzymes are involved in metabolizing natural and synthetic chemical compounds. And what we do is we expose the fish to these compounds and measure how they change the expression of these enzymes with respect to their chemical environment, as well as the adverse effects associated with such systems.
And so can you tell us a little bit more about these fish that you work on? Can you describe what they look like for some of us that may not know what those types of fish are?
Well, they're basically fish in the size range of 2 centimeters to about 18 centimeters. They get their name from their scribbled pattern on their skin, and they usually reflect a brown color. And these are herbivorous fish, so they eat algae.
Oh, neat. And so you're working on these fish and on fish biology, but you're out on this mapping cruise or oceanography cruise. How has that been for you transitioning from fish biology to mapping?
Well, as far as I can recall, I was taught at a very young age the importance of the marine environment and the resources it provides for people. And coming from a small island such as Guam, I learned to appreciate these qualities very early. As you would imagine, oceanography encompasses not only the things that are tangible, but it includes also the intangibles, such as bathymetry, water column and salinity, temperature, and tectonic plates. Considering not much is known about the ocean floor, I felt the need to venture into a field which I had no previous experience to gain a better understanding about the processes that helps shape the marine environment.
So after you're done with this research cruise, you're going to be finishing your own research fairly soon here. What's next for you? What's on the horizon?
Well, I'm uncertain at this point. I have been offered various opportunities, and I feel that things will fall into place as my scientific career progresses. At this point, I'm moving with the currents and adapting to the tides, simply for the reason that you just never know where the ocean will take you.
I love that analogy. That's fantastic. And the mapping work that you've been doing, did you have to be trained on all the software or the mapping, or did you already know how to do all of it?
Well, as far as the multi-beam system, the mapping work is new to me. However, I have worked with programs similar to the one we are using to process the multi-beam data. Normally, my work revolves around being in the water, so being out of the water, yet still gaining important information aboard a first-class ship such as the RV Falkor, I will admit, is quite new.
And I know I've heard rumblings on the ship from a few people that you have mastered the mapping software. Are you going to be signing up for more oceanography cruises or mapping cruises after this one?
Well, I wouldn't go that far just yet. Other individuals on this OJP science team, including Colleen and Jimbo, the Falkor's marine technicians, and Tomer Ketter, have worked with these mapping software longer than I. Fortunately, I have been privileged to learn from them at such a fast pace. From what I've gained from them thus far, you can say that I caught the oceanography bug, most definitely.
And, well, tell us a little bit about this mapping software, because most people will never have access to this multi-beam mapping. What do you do with the software? Tell us, how does it work?
So basically, the data generated by the multi-beam system consists of track lines, which amount to 60 minutes per track line and 20 track lines per day. First, we import the raw data, or track lines, into the CARIS HIPS program. The data is partitioned by day so that we know exactly what lines were done on that specific day. Second, we examine the attitude and navigation profile to see if the track line profile coincides with what the ship is doing. Third, we clean the data using the SWOT editor, which cleans the data generated by sonar pings of artifacts. We define artifacts as bad or spurious data, which are removed from the SWOT surface. Fourth, we load the tide information for the corresponding track line and merge the track line and the SWOT surface to the entire survey surface. You can imagine it as taking a paintbrush and painting the ocean floor. Only the ocean floor is three-dimensional as opposed to a two-dimensional painting. In the end, we have a bunch of track lines with compiled SWOT surfaces that gives us a general representation of how the seafloor actually appears. We view this by creating models from the data that show all the interesting features of the world beneath the ocean surface. And all this takes place in the science control room using multiple PCs.
So what has been your favorite part of the mapping so far?
The best thing about mapping uncharted waters revolves around discovering new features thousands of meters beneath the surface that you never knew existed. It is a completely different world down there, and new discoveries are always awaiting.
Excellent. Well, it sounds like you guys have been having a great time. What's it like working with such an international team? I know there are scientists from the United States, and the United Kingdom, Germany, Papua New Guinea, and Japan, not to mention the international crew on board.
Well, it's definitely unlike any other. The beautiful thing about science, especially authentic science, involves breaking borders and established economic zones, coming together to achieve one goal, which is quality and meaningful science. I hope that our work here shows the world that no matter where we come from, it's about helping one another. Science without borders.
I love that. And so if you could take one thing back from this cruise that you've learned with you to Guam and the University of Guam, what would that be?
Well, Carly, I would say working with diverse yet intelligent and dedicated scientific minds. Everyone aboard the RV Falkor, from the captain to the officers, marine techs, chefs and stewards, engineers and scientists, make this vessel a place to call home. And how can I forget our chief scientist, Mike Coffin, who assembled an amazing team to discover the mysteries of the Ontong Java Plateau. Truly, I am humbled to be here.
Well, I'm glad you brought up Mike. We'll be speaking with him next Thank you so much, AJ. I know you guys are busy working 24-hour shifts, so I appreciate you taking the time to talk with us. We're going to take a quick traffic break, and when we return, we will get a chance to chat with Chief Scientist Mike Coffin.
Thanks. 760 KGU.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
Several accidents right now downtown at A'ala and Vineyard Boulevard, in Kalihi at Mokawea Street and Auiki, and there was one on the Moanalua Freeway westbound at the Alakapuna on-ramp. If you're going west on the Moanalua, expect it to be slow before Middle Street. H1 slows right after you get on the airport viaduct. Kamehameha Highway traffic normal from the airport out to the Waiau Power Plant.
Are you missing the best things in life and want to enjoy more? Then Kaiani is what you've been looking for.
Aloha, this is the solar guy, Jeff Davis, and today I've got a twist on solar power for you, Kaiani. I started taking Kaiani several months ago, guys, because I wanted more energy through better nutrition. I'm not into powders and pills, so Kaiani was an easy choice. It has extracts of natural superfoods, noni, wild Alaskan blueberries, acai, Alaskan salmon oil, many, many more things, all of which I believe in and have been. Adding Kaiani was like adding an additional solar charge battery to my system. I feel great throughout the day. I recommend Kaiani. You must give it a try.
To get Kaiani or more information, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200. Call now and enjoy more with Kaiani. Kanilea, family-owned, locally manufactured in Kaneohe. Kanilea Ukulele is our local one-stop shop for all grades and styles of ukulele and guitar lele.
Aloha, it's Jeff. I'm so happy and proud to be using Kanilea's instruments. Now, the guitar lele, the koa instrument that they have made for me, is something I cherish and I'll keep for the rest of my life. I mean, honestly, it beats my Martin, it beats my Taylor, it beats my Ovation. I love the Kanilea sound. So please give them a call and check out their showroom in Kaneohe. Aloha.
Located in Kaneohe Industrial Park at 216 Kahuhipa Street. Just call 234-2868.
Aloha. Hawaii's Tomorrow and Jeff Davis are looking for motivated people. Are you a writer? The Solar Guy could use some comedy. Would you like to intern? You know he's got room, so give Jeff a call. Jeff Davis at 554-7200.
554-7200. Aloha. It's your Solar Guy, Jeff Davis. The tax year, the end of the year, are quickly approaching. The end of December, all PV systems have to be installed, all solar water systems, all solar pool pumps, you name it, all solar products must be installed before the end of the year in order to take a tax credit for 2014. Hawaiian Electric has slowed down the process, so I would encourage anyone who is interested, whether they plan to go through it or not in the end, at least get in the queue. Get in line with Hawaiian Electric by simply giving me a call. Your solar guy, Jeff, at 554-7200. There's no charge. There's no commitment. We send that in, and we wait to see for Hawaiian Electric. Now, there may be a time that comes when there will be no ability to do so. So I encourage any and all of you who are considering photovoltaics, give me a call at 554-7200, and let's just send your paperwork in and get you approved, no matter how long it might take. At least you're in line with Hawaiian Electric. It's free. There's no charge. There's no commitment to any particular solar company. I'll be happy to help you with it. That's my job. So just give your solar guy, Jeff Davis, a call. 554-7200. Aloha.
Babies cry, children squeal, riding round the tricycles or the three-wheel.
Children... Aloha noho I kako, and ho mai ka I noho I praise to Jeff Davis.
You're terrible at this.
I'm terrible.
I love you, Ruby. Aloha.
My name is Braden DeVos, and I believe in education. I say get one. Take it, Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, the Marine Science Gal, and we are talking today live with the research team mapping the Ontong Java Plateau aboard research vessel Falkor. With us now is Chief Scientist of the expedition, Professor Mike Coffin. Dr. Coffin is the Executive Director of the Institute for Marine and Antarctic Studies at the University of Tasmania and is a marine geophysicist. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Carly.
We're so glad to have you guys calling in from the remote area of Pompeii. How does it feel to be out there doing the work that you're doing?
Well, in a word, I'm ecstatic about working on Ontong Java again. I'm really attracted to relatively unexplored parts of the ocean, and Ontong Java definitely fits into that category.
Now, Mike, you've been on 6 research expeditions to this area, if my research is correct. And obviously, there's something that keeps drawing you back to this special place. Can you tell us a little bit about what that is?
Yes, it's the unexplored nature of it. There's so many mysteries about Ontong Java. For example, how did so much magma erupt in so little time? What caused the magma to erupt in the first place? How did the eruption of the plateau affect the Earth's environment? For example, all of the ocean, save the uppermost few hundred meters, lost all its oxygen at the time that Ontong Java formed. And that turns out to be the basis for our hydrocarbon culture. All the carbon that was stored has turned into oil and gas. Another question is, how did the plateau evolve after it formed? And that's what we're studying right now, a feature on top of the plateau.
Now, many of our listeners here have never heard of Ontong Java. Can you tell me about the area itself and why is it so important? Why are we trying to study how this volcano was created?
Sure. The Ontong Java Plateau is one of a class of features that we call flood basalt provinces, or otherwise known as large igneous provinces, or LIPS. And we also see them on other planets and the moon. So we see them on Mercury, Mars, Venus, as well as our moon. Ontong Java is the largest such feature currently known on Earth and thus has the potential to illuminate how these features form and evolve and what are the underlying processes that cause them.
Now, I know we're going to talk a little bit more about the mapping later on in the program here, but what do you hope to achieve or learn from mapping this area?
Well, as you've indicated, our main objective is to map Kroenke Canyon, and it's named after a geophysicist at the University of Hawaii named Lauren Kroenke, who did his PhD on the plateau, and he's made it a major focus of his career. Kroenke Canyon, the scale of it is similar to the Grand Canyon, and we hope to learn more about the processes that created it and what the actual source of the canyon is.
Oh, that's so interesting. And so this person that worked with this plateau is from the University of Hawaii. That's nice to know. And how will these maps that you're going to be working with, I know you're going to be linking them with some tsunami predictions. How does that go hand in hand?
Well, these are the very first bathymetric maps of the seafloor around these two atolls. Ontong Java Atoll belongs to the Solomon Islands, and Nukumanu Atoll is part of Papua New Guinea. So our new data will allow estimation for the first time of the risk that tsunamis pose for these atolls. And because the maximum elevation on Ontong Java is only 13 meters, and on Nukumanu Atoll it's only 2 meters, that assessment is going to be of great benefit to the approximately 2,000 people, all Polynesians, who live on those two atolls.
And have you ever met with any of the folks on the atolls before?
Unfortunately, no. We had a boat come out that approached the ship with a person aboard who waved at us. I don't know whether he spoke our language or not. We saw lights ashore. We saw various huts, but no, we haven't had any direct contact with the inhabitants.
And are there any unique features that you've seen so far on this cruise? Any new seamounts or anything that's been really surprising to you?
Oh, I could talk for an hour about that. we mapped a seamount near Nukumanu Atoll that rises about 900 meters above the ambient seafloor, and we've seen many smaller volcanoes, or at least interpreted volcanoes, on the seafloor. Perhaps more importantly, we found the main axis of Kroenke Canyon over a distance of more than 450 kilometers. And amazingly, that canyon, despite being entirely submarine, looks a lot like the Grand Canyon in Arizona. It has a large catchment area, has a lot of tributaries, and overall, if you looked at it in map view, it would have a dendritic pattern.
And so are you also looking for shallow water origins of this canyon or canyon?
Most definitely. Canyons have to start somewhere, and uphill and above the sea surface are pretty good guesses. We only had sparse data before this expedition, so we could only see the canyon well down on the flanks of the plateau. So tracing it back to its source, as we do with canyons on continental shelves, has been an important objective. The two atolls were obvious candidates for being the source of the canyon, being underlain by volcanoes that prior to erosion stood high above sea level. So that was the first place we went to look as potential source for the canyon.
And are there features that you hope to clarify that you have not been able to identify on the cruise yet?
That's always the way with marine research. You collect some data and it sometimes or oftentimes raises more questions than you're able to answer. What we'd really like to understand about the whole canyon system, mapping not just the axis but all of its tributaries and its entire catchment area, but time is not going to allow that. The canyon appears to result from a complex interplay of mass wasting, and by mass wasting I mean slumping and landslides and turbidity currents flowing from shallow regions. There's different types of sediment, there are different sedimentary rock lithologies, and we also have to deal with the calcite compensation depth, the depth in the ocean where anything that's made of calcium carbonate dissolves, or its deposition rate equals the dissolution rate. And so much of the sediment is carbonate sediment that below that depth, which is close to 4,000 meters, that sediment just disappears. We'd also like to identify which slopes are failure surfaces. So where is the sediment actually sliding on? Is it some lithologic boundary? And whether or not the canyon is cut into igneous rock. And so far, we haven't been able to do that.
Well, I hope lots of these mysteries become revealed shortly. And as a result of this cruise, I assume perhaps maybe you'll be coming back to this area again. Do you have anything planned in terms of next steps?
I'd really like to return to the plateau, and I'd like to look at several problems. First, I'd like to finish mapping the entire canyon system and its catchment area, all the way from the atolls out into the neighboring Nauru Basin. I view this whole systems approach as essential to understanding the whole system. Secondly, I'd like to map around the other atolls on the plateau. There are more than just the two we've mapped, both to understand the volcanism around the plateau, as well as to provide data for tsunami risk assessment. And last, I'd like to sample igneous rock, the igneous basement of the plateau, whether we do that by dredging or drilling, so we can learn more about the plateau's origin and evolution.
So there's still a lot to be done, is what you're saying.
Exactly, yes.
Now, I know a lot of work goes into these expeditions, and now that you're actually on the ship and doing the mapping, and I know you have lots of ideas of what you want to do when you come back, what happens once you get back to your office? Is there, a process you do to deal with the data?
We are editing the data here at sea, and so we hope to walk off the ship with a relatively clean, and by clean, I mean edited data set from the multi-beam echosounder. We'll process that data further in collaboration with scientists at Columbia University in New York. Then the various team members, which are dispersed around the globe, will analyze the data. We'll probably be Skyping a lot. And eventually, we'll write up our interpretations and publish them.
Well, I look forward to seeing some of those interpretations published. Now, are you just focusing on Ontong Java, or are you dividing your time to other regions of the world as well?
My research covers a pretty broad geographic area. Some people say that I have a bipolar disorder because I work on the equator and I work in the high latitudes. in general, I'm interested in massive volcanism on the seafloor and as one topic, and plate tectonic boundaries as another. Up until a few months ago, I was supposed to lead a 60-day cruise into the Southern Ocean to another oceanic plateau called the Kerguelen Plateau starting late next month. But that expedition has been deferred, and that expedition is actually to look at active submarine volcanoes on the seafloor and try to relate the fluids that are emanating from these volcanoes up through the water column to the surface waters where we think they're actually feeding phytoplankton blooms. But that cruise now is not going to happen until next austral summer at the earliest. That voyage will be my sixth visit to that particular plateau. Other areas that I'm working on at present are the Manahiki Plateau in the South Pacific and the Macquarie Ridge Complex south of New Zealand. So switching between working near the equator and deep into the Southern Ocean makes life interesting.
It certainly does. Now, this expedition wraps up on Sunday. Are there any particular goals for the last few days of the cruise?
Yes. We really want to try to finish mapping the canyon in a transition area between the plateau and the deep Nauru Basin off to the northeast of the plateau, which is named for the island of Nauru, of course, in which it sits. And this is all basic exploration because we don't have any idea how far the canyon actually extends into the basin because there's no data there. We also want to look at a potential major tributary that feeds into the canyon on the lower reaches of the plateau. So sadly, we won't be able to accomplish anything but a fraction of this. But happily, we've gained so much knowledge from the data we've collected so far that everybody on the ship is smiling.
Well, smiles are a good sign. Mike, thank you so much for taking some time to chat with us today. It's been a really exciting expedition, and it's been a pleasure to follow the blogs online and your blog online. Stay tuned as we will be continuing our conversation about Ontong Java Atoll with Mark Heckman after this quick traffic break.
KGU,
part of the Wall Street Business Network.
It's a normal drive to Hawaii Kai and to the windward side. If you're going to the west, the H1 is going to be your best bet right now. It slows at the airport exit on the viaduct as usual, but the Moanalua is extra slow because of an accident up on Red Hill. The Moanalua slowdown starts before Middle Street. If you're coming into town from the west side, you're going to get into slow traffic at Liliha. It's going to continue to the Punahou exit.
You want to get solar for all the right reasons, to live greener and get your utility bills under control. But the one thing you don't want is to get stuck with a solar conversion system that can't keep up with changing electrical rules and regulations. So get a system that's future perfect, one smart enough to let you use all the renewable energy you can produce, plus store the surplus for when you want to use it. That's Outback Power, with exclusive grid hybrid technology backed by legendary support. With an Outback Power system, you can have it all. Net metering when it's available or off-grid independence when it makes the most sense. Contact Outback Power Technologies for an installation specialist near you.
Aloha. This is a solar daughter, Lena Davis. My dad, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, has been telling me to listen to him my whole life. It's helped me, and I'm sure it'll help you too. Be sure to listen to My Dad, the Solar Guy, 5 to 6 p.m. Monday through Friday on 760 KGU. Aloha.
Aloha, this is the solar guy, Jeff Davis. Do you want free 5 panels? How about a free trip to Vegas? I know, free financing. Then don't call me. For 25 years, Kameyama Solar believes in treating our clients with respect. We do not subcontract. We do not offer anything for free, besides Aloha. What we do offer is hands-on installation with 25 years of experience and a 10-year workmanship warranty. Call me, the solar guy, Jeff Davis, at 554-7200. Aloha at 554-7200. Aloha, it's your solar guy, Jeff Davis. You know, I'm offering you folks a chance to get an education, this time about on-bill financing. You've heard about the new bill the governor signed, paying for your photovoltaic system on your electricity bill. As you may know, the governor just signed this revolutionary bill, and it is directed and aimed at folks that have no ability to find the upfront money for their photovoltaic purchase. If you have questions, you can always call me or attend my seminar. Get a hold of me at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. And aloha.
Hi, I'm Frank Rogers from Leakmaster Roofing and the Cool Roof Store. We sell and install protective roof coatings for all types of roofs. What kind of roof do you have? For flat roofs, we recommend silicone roof coatings because they withstand unlimited ponding water and they come with a 50-year material warranty. We feature trusted names like Geico, NXT Cool Zone, and Apox Silicone with some of the lowest prices in town. If you have a Monier roof or a metal roof, we recommend that you recoat them with NXT Cool Zone to make them shine like new. Asphalt shingles can be protected and waterproof for the lifetime of your home with the Cool Roof Store's ceramic coating. Whether you want LeakMaster Roofing to install the coating or want to do it yourself, come on down to our store in Kaka'ako or visit us at leakmaster.com. Why re-roof when you can simply recoat?
So you're doing the right thing. You're getting a solar voltaic system for your home or business. But did you know the crucial decision is which microinverter to choose? A microinverter is what's going to convert the sunshine from your solar panels into electricity you can use.
But not all microinverters are created equal.
The Enexis microinverter system dramatically boosts energy harvest with higher wattage microinverters. We're talking up to 40% over its competitors. Year after year, you'll be getting more bang for your buck.
Because not all microinverters are created equal.
So make sure your contractor offers the Enexis microinverter with the system you can monitor yourself. Your system will shine today and be ready for a brilliant tomorrow. For more information, visit enexis.com. That's enexis.com. E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com. That's E-N-E-C-S-Y-S.com.
My name is Braden DeVos, and I believe in education. I say get one. Take it, Solar Guy.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal, and today we are talking about the mysterious Ontong Java Plateau. With us now is Mark Heckman, education specialist for the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology. Mark runs the community education program at Coconut Island and has been working as an outreach specialist for the Ontong Java expedition aboard research vessel Falkor. Welcome to the show, Mark.
Thanks, Carly. Great to be here.
So, Mark, this is your first time aboard the research vessel, and I'm assuming the first time you've been on a mapping cruise before. How's it been going?
It's great. This is a real departure for me because mostly what I've been on before have been a bunch of biologist types, right? So this is real different. It's fun.
And now I know you have been subject to some crazy hours. The ship is running 24-hour operations. What does your shift look like? And tell me a little what it entails.
Okay. Well, they were short of crew members, so I got impressed into duty, I guess. So, yeah, I wake up around 11 o'clock at night, and at 12 o'clock my shift starts with one of my colleagues. We map through the night from midnight to 8 a.m. I try to get some extra work done as well, you know, some office work and some other work done. And then at about 7 to 8 is breakfast. At 8:30, there's a meeting on the bridge that I attend. By about 9, I hopefully put my face to pillow for about 2 hours. Then I get up for lunch, and then I kind of, after that, it's pretty variable because I need to be up for whatever events are happening, so I try to steal little cat naps here and there, and then hopefully go back to bed by 6 o'clock or something, or 7, to get ready for the 11 o'clock shift again.
Wow, so you are definitely keeping a very busy schedule. Now, these meetings on the bridge, is it sort of to plan the day out, or how do you know what's going to happen on board?
Well, this is the mapping crew, so really, Mike calls the shots. It's kind of interesting to realize that the ship is driven based on what's going on with the mapping. So down in the science control room, we're watching the maps of the ocean floor as the multi-beam scanner is pinging along. But they also have that up on the bridge. And during the night, we'll call up to the bridge or vice versa, and if it looks like there's a feature of interest or something, we might ask them to change course slightly. But really, it's, again, the mapping that drives the way the boat goes. So that's kind of interesting in and of itself.
And you're, although you're also working on the mapping, you're doing the outreach on board as well. From the communication side, how has that experience been so far?
You know, that's just been fantastic because there are just so many stories here, right? The the crew on the vessel is fantastic. These are people that are here because not only do they have an interest in their own careers, be it engineering or whatever, but they also come to the seminars. So when the research teams are giving their seminars, here are the research crew, but also all these people from different departments on the ship as well. So just lots of interesting stories. And then the science crew itself, some of those folks are quite willing to jump in and do some communication, write a blog on their side. I'm learning like crazy. It's just as good as it gets.
And you mentioned these seminars. Are these on board or are these back on land? What kind of seminars are they?
Well, anyone who wants to give a seminar can give a seminar here. So certainly each of the science crew have been giving seminars, sometimes on the mapping, but Amelia just did one on the floating cities in Cambodia, and so they're talking about outside research interests as well. So, yeah, they're during the day, different times, so we try to cover different shifts, but every other day is a science seminar.
Fantastic. So lots of learning. Anything surprising to you or anything that you didn't think you'd be learning about on this cruise?
There's probably a lot of things, actually. It's kind of interesting. You know, here I work for SOEST, ultimately, the School of Ocean Earth Science and Technology, and they've got a huge oceanography group. And I know a number of those people, but, you know, I'm mostly a fish and invert person. So it's been really fun to see that whole other world. And I, you know, it's fascinating. I didn't think it would be nearly as interesting as it is. But, you know, like one night where, you know, you're just watching the beam slowly work its way along the ocean floor and nothing really exciting is happening. And then a part of a feature sort of rises up on one side and Tomer, who I was working with, goes, "I think that's a seamount." I was like, "Really?" He's like, "Yeah, I think I'll turn the ship around." I was like, "You can do that?" he calls up to the bridge, you know, and just reverses course, goes back, does this big circle around this thing, and then shifts back to the course that we were doing. It was really cool. I mean, he just discovered this new seamount right there, you know. So Mike's got, you know, the work he's doing here, it's just as exciting as discovering shipwrecks, maybe more so. It's very interesting, very cool.
Sounds amazing. Now, I know you're very focused on mapping what's under the water, but can you help us visualize sort of what the area looks like that you're sailing in? I mean, coming from Hawaii, does it look different or the same?
If you've ever been out on the water on the flattest day you can imagine, that is what it's like. We're essentially in the doldrums, the southern doldrums here. It is absolutely pancake, flat, blue, tropical, as far as the eye can see, in every direction. It's kind of surreal.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. When we saw the atolls, that was nice. You know, there were some little bits of topography and they were very fascinating. But otherwise, once we're offshore from those, it's just big, blue, and tropical.
Well, blue is the right color when you're out at sea. Now, you have a graduate student on board as well who's been very interested in a lot of the science communication and has done a few blogs for you. Her name's Amelia, right?
Yeah.
Excellent. Now, is Amelia around? I know I wanted to talk to her a little bit, too, about some of her experiences blogging and working on the Falkor.
I will pass you over to Amelia, and I'm sure we will hear much from her down the line as well in science communication. Here you go.
Thanks, Mark. So now, Amelia, you are a graduate student as well, like AJ, working for the Institute for Marine and Arctic Studies in Hobart, Australia. How have you been enjoying your time aboard Falkor thus far?
That's all correct. I've been having a fantastic time. The team here is brilliant. The ship's fantastic, and we've been getting to do some really cool science as well. So it's pretty good.
Now, you're doing your own research for your master's work, and everything that's going or being collected on this cruise, you're going to be using that for your work. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, that's correct. So there's two of us from IMAS who will be using this data for our theses, and I will be focusing on the atolls. So I'll be focusing on things like the tsunami risk. And then my colleague, Nick, he'll be focusing on how the canyon has formed and then writing up that discussion.
Oh, fantastic. Now, in the midst of collecting all this information, you've also been doing some of your own blogging as well as writing some blogs for the Schmidt Ocean Institute website. Where do you draw your inspiration for some of the things you write about?
At the moment, I've been drawing a lot of it from the enthusiasm and the passion of the crew and the people around me. Just sitting down and having lunch with some of the other scientists there's been so many fruitful and exciting discussions, and people are just so full of ideas. And then also talking to the technical crew who run the boat, their curiosity has really sort of helped to drive my blogs, and their questions have sort of helped me work out what other people on the land might be curious to know about as well.
And where can we find your blog if we'd like to read more about your adventures at sea?
My personal blog is at gisandjournalism.weebly.com, and also the Schmidt Institute blog's been fantastic as well.
Oh, well, that's great. I'm so happy that you've been able to share some of your experiences. Is there any favorites or anything that really stands out so far in your mind as something that's been very memorable for you?
Always when you're working at the very frontiers of science, I think pretty much everything's going to be exciting and new and thrilling, even at 3 a.m. in the morning, which is fantastic if you can be excited then. But I think what's really going to stick after this is just the genuine curiosity and the genuine passion that has come across from all my colleagues and the camaraderie that's developed. That and the science are two invaluable things for sure.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you so much, Mark and Amelia. I really look forward to reading about your blogs and learning more about your adventures. We're going to take a quick traffic break, but stay tuned because we're going to be learning the secrets of running a kitchen at sea when we return.
Part of the Wall Street Business Network.
No new accidents. The last one was on Red Hill on the Mauna Freeway westbound. It's backed up before Middle Street and extra slow. If you have a choice, take the H1. It's backed up on the airport viaduct as usual, but moving better than the Mauna Lua. In IAO, we got a stall reported at the Ka'amilo overpass. To the east side, normal conditions to Hawaii Kai, and it's also normal to the windward side.
Hi, it's Jeff. Aloha. It seems as though Hawaiian Electric has made their decision to slow down photovoltaic solar electric installation throughout this last tax season. Many people have turned to battery storage systems to save money on the upgrades and to beat the tax season. These battery storage systems are standalone. You're not connected to the grid. You do receive this year's tax credits for them, and you can install them in any area on the island at any time. It's a fantastic idea. Now, I'm Kamiyama Solar, and we've installed many of these systems in the past. If you have any questions for me, they can be answered generically with a phone call. So go ahead and get to me, Jeff Davis, your solar guy, regarding battery storage systems for your photovoltaics this year at 554-7200. That's 554-7200. Aloha!
Aloha! If you would like to work with Jeff and Kamiyama Solar in a sales position, Jeff is hiring qualified people for full or part-time positions. Please call Jeff at 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
If you're unhappy with the high prices or the way you've been treated by mainland corporations, get rid of them. Let Hank's Tax Service help you. Hank and his employees have been preparing taxes in Hawaii for close to 20 years. The sharpest preparers from Hank's 2 decades of unparalleled tax service have rejoined him to serve you, not make money for a mainland corporation. If you're paying over $200, you're paying way too much. Get rid of that mainland corporation and come to Hank's. Hank's Tax Service, 853-1170. 853-1170.
Aloha, it's Jeff. Is it hotter in your home than out on your lanai? Do you wish there was an energy-efficient way to cool down? Wouldn't it be nice to turn on the trays at the flip of a switch? Well, my friends at Island Cooling have been quietly promoting the energy-efficient whole house fan for years. It works by drawing fresh air through your home, pushing the hot air out through your attic. Call the whole house fan experts at Island Cooling, 672-2300, 672-2300, or go to islandcooling.com. Aloha.
If you're unhappy with the high prices or the way you've been treated by mainland corporations, get rid of them. Let Hank's Tax Service help you. Hank and his employees have been preparing taxes in Hawaii for close to 20 years. The sharpest preparers from Hank's 2 decades of unparalleled tax service have rejoined him to serve you, not make money for a mainland corporation. If you're paying over $200, you're paying way too much. Get rid of that mainland corporation and come to Hank's. Hank's Tax Service, 853-1170. 853-1170.
If you would like to contact Jeff either about the program or have any other questions about solar photovoltaics or hot water, call 554-7200. That's 554-7200.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, I'm Carly Weiner, your marine science gal. Last but not least, we have Chef Carlos with us here today. Carlos is one of Schmidt Ocean Institute's chefs aboard research vessel Falkor and is responsible for feeding the entire crew and science team. Carlos, it's a pleasure to have you on the show.
Hello, Carly. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Of course. First off, how did you get to be a chef working on a research vessel?
Yeah, to make the long story short, is like I used to work with another chef back times in London, and after he was working at Super Yachts, he enjoyed the research vessel Falkor, and then he invited me, yeah, and I'm very glad he did.
Now, this is a very different gig than most chefs. What attracted you most to working on board a research vessel?
I think that's first of all is to be in contact with people from all over the globe, right? And doing science and the option to, as well that to be traveling around the world and to, you know, to get to know different people, different experience, and different needs, talking about diet as well. So it's an amazing experience. Yeah, I'm very happy about it.
And how I'm so amazed by how you feed everyone, you know, 3 meals a day when they're working 24-hour shifts.
Yeah, actually, Carly, we do 4 times. We have the breakfast in the morning. That's 7 o'clock, 7 to 8 o'clock in the morning. And then we have 11:30, have a lunchtime. And 5:30 p.m. we have dinner, and then we have the 11 to 12 o'clock p.m. we have the night shift. So actually 4 times, plus, you know, we have the snack cabinet, and always try to make some food available for everybody that is on board. Yeah.
Well, I've only heard good things, so I'm sure nobody goes hungry. And how has it been working with the science crew? Do you get an opportunity to get out of the kitchen and interact with the scientists much?
Yeah. Yes, we do. Yeah. The last time, the last time that we did, I can remember, was with some students for University of Hawaii. They invited myself and my colleague Eric to spend a day looking, you know, watching the humpback whales. And that was amazing opportunity, yeah, to interact a little bit, you know. And we can say that we did some science as well, so it was very nice.
I'm glad to hear that you get to do that sometimes. And working with both the science team and the crew, I mean, you have people from all over the world coming on board. Do you cook for a particular taste, or has anyone requested for foods native to their background?
Well, every single request is all very welcome in the galley. We try to please everybody. But the crew and the science, to be honest with you, they are very easygoing. They don't make like a crazy requests. And but anyway, trying to get to know who is on board, we try to, you know, cook some dishes from the countries, and always have the internet as well. If we never cook these kind of, you know, dishes before, we find the recipes in the internet and try to please them, yeah, to make more fun the time here on board of Falco.
So what's the latest recipe you've picked up from the crew or by suggestion from somebody?
I have one here, a request from Marine Tech Colleen here on board. That she asked me to cook bacon and chocolate chip cookies. Yes.
She
came up with this recipe. And I haven't done it yet, but it's on the list. It's on the wish list, and I'm probably going to be trying to do that soon, yeah.
Oh, wow, you have to let us know how that goes.
Certainly.
And, you know, it's hard when you're going out to sea for such a long period of time. I mean, this mapping cruise is only a couple weeks, but typically research cruises can go up to 31 days. So how do you know how much food to order for a trip or how much food to put out for each meal?
Well, to give you like one idea, like if we have like for this trip, we have like around 30 people on board. Every meal is like 6 kg of meat, fish, or chicken, and talk about lunch and dinner plus breakfast and nighttime shift. So we're just trying to calculate, and some as well. To be honest, after working almost 4 years in this company, the experience gives you, you know, some know-how, and you pretty much know. Knowing how many people we have on board for how many days, and then, you know, helps a lot to place the order, yeah.
Hmm. And do you have a special way to keep the food fresh? I mean, when I sailed, I was very impressed with how long the fresh fruits and vegetables lasted.
Well, to be honest, what I try to do is like of course, every single place that we go, we try to get local, buy some local fruit, local vegetables. That's the fresh that you can get, right? And then once we have all this food on board, we try to be just as smart, use what you think they're going to ripe first. We try to use first, use your creativity, and you know, and play this game with our stock down there. And pretty much that's the only secret. Yeah, and I think that the tips I would give is try to buy every time that you can, like a local food in the local market. Try to get some recipes as well in the, with the locals. And, yeah, make me easier. My life easier, I would say.
And do you have any favorite thing to cook on board?
So again?
Is there anything you like to cook? What's your favorite thing to cook for the crew and the science team?
Well, yeah. Yeah, I'm a big fan of seafood, right? The other day, our bosun, Mick, he catch a beautiful barracuda. And I can tell that 2 hours later, the barracuda was in the barbecue. Yeah, it was an amazing experience.
Well, that's great. Thank you so much for your time, Carlos. I look forward to hopefully sampling your food soon. I'd like to thank all my guests today for talking about this special place on Tongjava and from calling in from all the way from Pompeii. I also want to give a special thank you to Jeff Davis, the Solar Guy, the Hawaii Institute of Marine Biology, and Coastie Island Earth. I'm Carly Weiner. Now get out there and enjoy our ocean planet.